Beyond Belief with Kieran Devaney.
Oh, hello. Yes, you want an appointment with Dr. Azurdia?
Dr. Michael Azurdia is a world general practitioner. He's a leading campaigner in the fight to raise money for cancer research at Clatterbridge Hospital. What makes him different is that while most doctors scorn the work of John Cain the healer, Dr. Michael Azurdia actually shares his patients with him.
A number of patients have said that they go to him either regularly or irregularly, and they do seem to derive an awful lot of relief and solace from his help. This came to a head more or less about 6 months or so ago when a patient of mine, who I really didn't know what to do with, she'd reached the end of the line as far as I was concerned with investigations and treatment, and I was honest and said I didn't feel I could help her anymore, but I did feel that perhaps she would be helped by someone like John Cain, and that on a nothing to lose basis she really ought to go along and see him. She was quite horrified at this suggestion, but fair play to her, she did go along and see him, and unbelievably the very next day she rang me and said how much better she was feeling as a result of her visit to him. And since that time I've seen her on one occasion for a very minor ailment, and I understand that she's deriving enormous help from him and has been very well. I suppose I've got quite a number of patients that have been going to him in various numbers, in various measure for a while, and a lot of them do find that he's very helpful. Inevitably, there are people that don't believe in him and don't think that he can help them. I must say, though, that since this particular episode 6 months ago, that I have sent a number of patients to him, and almost in every case they have been helped.
Dr. Azurdia has only met John Cain once. He was called to his bedside when Cain collapsed with a heart attack 2 years ago. Neither has he seen how Cain operates. What he does know about is John Cain's reputation as a healer who appears to perform miracles.
I think he's a very remarkable man. I can't, like everybody else, understand how he works, and I don't really believe that he understands it fully either. But he has got a gift to help people. He does seem to be able to get in tune with thinking habits and their thought processes, and a definite improvement in their health ensues as a result of his interference. He never has hurt anybody, as far as I am aware. He doesn't ask for money, and whilst being a rather larger-than-life character himself, not stinting himself in his behaviour in relation to cigarettes and whatever else, he does seem to help his patients enormously. And I must say that he's certainly a tremendous force for good, in my opinion, in medicine.
I was bedridden. I was on pethidine, a heroin-based drug, sleeping tablets, triptosol, which is a very strong nerve tablets, and no way did I ever sleep. I'm just like an animal. That's the only way to describe me. I looked 140, and I'm bent in two.
7 years ago, Liverpool housewife Sheila Spears was crippled with incurable cancer. After 18 months in bed, she was dying an agonizing death. A doctor told her husband Dougie that at the most, she had 6 months left to live.
How did you feel?
Terrible. Shattered. Completely and utterly shattered. I couldn't tell her. I told her sister and that, but I had to keep it to myself, basically. And I just didn't know what to do. There was nothing left to do. They told me she was finished, and that was it. There was the hospital had said, she's finished now, there's nothing else can be done. She'll just have to live on the tablets, and that's it.
But Sheila's sister had heard about the amazing work John Cain was doing in Bromborough Civic Hall. Sheila reluctantly agreed to go to one of his evening clinics. But when Sheila got there, she was in so much pain that she insisted that her sister take her home before she'd met Cain.
As we were coming out, the sweat was bucketing from me with the pain. And somebody said, get John. All I could hear was, get John. John will see to her, you know. And I was saying no. More or less saying to my sister, let's get the hell out of here. Anyway, this John comes out and kneels beside me. And he asked me to close my eyes. And my actual words was, on your way, mate. I swore at him. I just said, bugger off, away from me. I said, you or no one else can help me. He said, would you just close your eyes? Because I was crying with the pain. So my sister Maureen, she said, look, kid, just close your eyes for a minute. So, okay, so please there, she took me. I closed my eyes for the second. And all John did was kneel at the side. He asked our kid where the pain was. And she said, well, basically, at the bottom of her back and in her left side, but now it's all through her body. So with that, John just places one hand on my back and one hand on my left side. And within the most I could think, 60 seconds, it was just like a finger entered into my spine and it was just like a light switch being switched off. I just said, you've got it, it's gone. And I said, mate, you don't know what the bloody hell has happened here tonight. Because I immediately sat straight up on the chair and my sister screamed. Maureen screamed because she was looking. I can't talk about it, Karen, without, I'm still amazed. Anyone asked me to repeat what happened, no way can I do it without getting choked up. If I die tomorrow, I have had nearly 7 years from this man, which I have never had even as a young girl.
Sheila Spear says it wasn't just a case of gaining relief from pain. For the first time in months, she was actually able to stand on her feet.
I walked out of that hall, and I got in my sister's car. I got out, I got back in 4 times, just for the novelty of being able to get in and out of a car on my own.
Can you remember what you felt when she walked in through the door?
When she walked in through that door, fantastic. I thought, my God, it can't be true. Is this going to last, though? Is this just going to be like this today, and tomorrow maybe? And then next week maybe she's back to that again. But I just firmly sort of believed, because I'd seen John, you know. After that, when I'd seen John and spoke to John, I realised, my God, this is going to last.
I've got the bottle upstairs. I rooted it out last night. I still got the bottle of the pethidine drugs I was on. The date is still on them, and you can inquire from any doctor, have I had them since? I never took one from that minute. I'm saying from that minute. Now, can you imagine, my doctor would only give Dougie 4 days' supply. They were in the police book, so much so that when we stopped going for them, the chemist we used to go to, Mr. Swift, in Gettica Park, he said to Dougie, months had gone by, and he said, Mr. Spears, I'm frightened to ask you. He said, but where is Mrs. Spears? So Dougie said, oh, she's fine. He said, what do you mean she's fine? So Dougie told him what had happened. He said, well, I was so worried because, he said, you haven't been coming in for the drugs. So he thought, I died, you see.
Very often in the mornings I go for a walk along the street, and still fixed in the mind is wondering where these energies are coming from and why me. And I feel at times when I'm walking or going into a shop, I'm still thinking as though I'm in some light form of trance state.
Like Dr. Azurdia, John Cain himself has no real idea where he gets his ability to heal people from. At 53, he's been searching for an answer for a lifetime, and quite likely he'll never find the answer.
What do people say to you when they meet you on the street? You're obviously well known around here.
Well, I don't go out all that often, but I'm very often pulled up outside the shop and say I've seen a post to you or a write-up about you, and generally goes on from there. They may come along for a healing, they may not. Some people are just nosy, you know. Could I have 40 pence and hedges, please, love?
£2.50, please. Thanks very much. Cain smokes up to 50 cigarettes a day, swears like a trooper, and is more than partial to Scotch whiskey. He works 12 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Right, thanks, love. Bye.
What about your own health? Does that ever suffer?
On and off. I suffer with the colds like other people. I had a heart attack purely and simply through overwork. But made a very, very quick recovery and soon back at work.
Does it ever worry you that while you're helping other people, you may be suffering yourself?
Well, at one time, I thought you had to be 100% fit to be able to heal anyone. But what I've found, that when I have had the flu in my earlier days, that I've said to Audrey, I don't think I'm going to be able to do much this afternoon. And when I've been in this particular state, I pull off far better healings.
More than once, Audrey Kane has worried about her husband's health. But she puts in the same long hours herself, looking after the filing, answering the hundreds of letters he receives every week, and organising a man who appears never to sit still.
What's he like to live with?
Well, it's not really an ordinary marriage, because John is seeing so many people, you know, and he does the healing, and I'm more involved with the office work and that sort of stuff.
Do you ever wish you had a normal life?
Sometimes, lots of times. Mostly when we're so busy and we don't get time for holidays, we don't get time to socialise very much, and sometimes that gets a bit of a bind.
What do you say to people who tell you that John's a fraud?
Well, I say that if you see all the people he's healed like I have, I know he's not a fraud.
Does it hurt you when people say that?
Oh, yes, sometimes, yeah.
What do you feel?
Well, you feel very hurt, you know. And that's mostly, you know, the way it hurts you when people say that sort of thing.
Do you ever regret the life you lead?
No. No, not at all. Because I always feel very sorry for sick people and any help they can get. You know, I realise John is doing a good thing.
But what really makes John Kane tick? Is it possible to find out more about his amazing powers? Powers which literally hundreds of people say enable him to make the blind see again, make the lame walk, and turn the incurably ill into well people.
I'm just about to put this headband round your head, Elaine. This fits above your ears, rather like the kind of thing one sees on an Indian maiden. And it's got holes in it, and through the holes we stick on the electrodes that will be attached to your head. Does that feel comfortable?
That's fine.
Good, good.
A Monday afternoon in John Kane's healing sanctuary in Birkenhead. Kane is about to embark on a series of remarkable experiments, which we organised in an attempt to find out what goes on in his mind when he's healing. Elaine Vickers, a World Bank clerk who suffers from arthritis, has just had a series of electrodes placed around her head. The man adjusting her headband is Ted Simpson, a psychotherapist with a practice in Liverpool's Rodney Street. He's connecting Elaine Vickers to a mind mirror, £2,500 worth of high technology, developed by scientists in London and brought to Kane's home by us.
This is simply a device that gives us a visual representation of brain activity. All the time we're alive, there's electrical activity in the brain, and it's possible to separate out, with an instrument such as this mind mirror, brain activity that accompanies ordinary waking, thinking and arguing and calculating and analysing, and watch that diminish as you relax and perhaps practice meditation. And then there's a separate waves, described as alpha waves, slower waves, that become visible on the mind mirror. And then even slower than those are theta waves and delta waves that appear when you're on the verge of going to sleep, perhaps using a lot of guided imagery of the kind that happens when you're dreaming. Now, the mind mirror itself is a rectangular box with a dozen parallel tubes, they look like, running away from me. And what I'm looking at are little dots of red light that are moving on both sides of the box. One side represents the left hemisphere of the brain, and the right-hand side represents the right hemisphere of the brain.
So we're going to be able to look inside John's head?
In a manner of speaking, we're looking inside John's head, both when he's awake, as he is now, sitting smoking a cigarette, and when he's healing, when one would expect that there would be a different kind of brain activity.
In our experiments, we used two mind mirrors, one connected to John Kane and the other to his patient. We also connected Kane and Elaine Vickers to two skin sensitivity meters. In effect, they measure the activity of the body's nervous system. John Kane stood in front of Elaine, touched her on the forehead, and instantly she relaxed into a deep trance. The experiment had begun.
Breathing deeper. Elaine is breathing very, very hard, and her mind mirror is showing considerable brain activity. The mirror, which is a display of 24 red dots, has the red dots flying outwards. John's mirror, on the other hand, although the dots are moving about, indicating activity in his brain, are showing a symmetry between his left hemisphere and right hemisphere activity.
As Ted Simpson monitored the instruments, Elaine Vickers sank deeper and deeper into her trance. And suddenly, Ted Simpson noticed something strange.
We have two skin resistance meters attached, one to John and one to Elaine. When we started, they were showing different readings, which is what one would expect from different individuals, with different approaches to life and different reactions. But now they're both showing the same basic metabolic rate.
What does that mean?
It means that whatever John is doing with his mind, whatever is happening there, somehow there's a matching of her nervous system activity to his.
Kane could offer no explanation for the way he influenced Elaine Vickers' nervous system, and Ted Simpson was clearly puzzled himself.
But Kane himself refuses to talk about cures, but acknowledges the fact that he has extraordinary powers, and has no idea where they come from. In the making of this series, we were conscious that if we found evidence to support the remarkable claims of Kane's followers, we may well be guilty of giving thousands of people false hope. On the other hand, we realized that if we attempted to expose Kane as a fraud and later found ourselves proved wrong, then we would be equally as guilty. Instead, with John Kane's agreement, we decided on a series of remarkable scientific tests. Tests which started with a machine capable of probing the depths of John Kane's brain.
Both Sheila and John are attached to mind mirrors. John facing Sheila and about 7 feet away. John is kneeling, opening his arms. Sheila's opening her arms. Sheila's becoming rigid. There's lots of activity on her mind mirror, lots of beta activity.
Summer 1984, the place John Kane's home in North Road, Birkenhead. The patient is Sheila Files, a 39-year-old housewife from Anglesey. The man is Ted Simpson, a psychotherapist with a practice in Liverpool's Rodney Street, the Harley Street of the North. The machines which Sheila and John Kane are wired to are called mind mirrors. In the hands of an experienced operator like Ted Simpson, they show a clear and irrefutable picture of what's happening in the brain.
Sheila is hyperventilating, taking deep breaths, deep shuddering breaths. Her mind mirror indicates lots and lots of arousal mental activity.
9 years ago, Sheila's doctors diagnosed incurable cancer.
I just started vomiting and then I thought I'd picked up a bug or something. Anyway, within the 12 weeks, I'd gone down to about 4.5 stone. And they put it down, they thought it was nerves in there at first. Anyway, they got somebody private. And they discovered I had this lump in my stomach. And within about 48 hours, they'd operated.
What happened after that?
I was in hospital about 12 months. I was in a wheelchair. And they said when I came out, I'd never eat anything solid again. I'd just be on warm liquids and fluids. I didn't know till afterwards, but apparently they told my husband they'd keep me as long as necessary, but they said there was nothing for me.
Sheila Files was given less than 12 months to live. Today, 9 years later, she enjoys a near-normal life. A life she says she owes to weekly visits to John Kane.
The lumps have gone. I had one come in my breast about 3 years ago. I never thought he'd move that. He said I wouldn't be here in 7 weeks if I didn't have operation for that. And John got rid of it completely.
Sheila Files isn't the only one who's claimed the miraculous cure at the hands of John Kane. During the making of these programs, we talked to at least 30 others. His followers claim there are hundreds more. People like Fred Swarbrick, who had major problems with his kidneys. He'd seen the doctors and in desperation turned to Kane for help. But days later, he was rushed into hospital.
My son-in-law told John Kane that I was going down for the op. Anyway, John came up to the hospital, pulled the screens round me, and he just did the same again as he did in the past. And that afternoon, I had nil by mouth at the foot of my bed. And that afternoon, I passed about 9 stones. And when the doctor came, he said, John Kane's doing me out of a job. And ever since then, my kidneys have been A1, so much so that the doctors now say that I can be a donor. Prior to that, they were saying that the only thing that would cure it would be, say, a transplant or a going under the dialysis machine.
John Kane claims that 95% of those who come to him derive some comfort from his treatment. A treatment which is even more bizarre than the cures it appears to effect.
Going back to when I was about 5 or 6 years old, my mother used to suffer with migraines. I just used to rub her temples and the pain would just disappear. At the age of 14, I joined a boxing club. And obviously there were sprains, but I was able to help people by massaging and manipulating. And then later on, I practiced judo for 25 years and I was doing exactly the same thing as I did in the boxing, just purely by massaging people and manipulating them, but I found I could take the pain away, not realising it was the gift of healing.
John Kane was brought up in the Church of England, but as a young man his interest turned to spiritualism and what spiritualists call developing circles. In developing circles, people sit in silence and attempt to contact the dead. But one such attempt led to him breaking with the spiritualist movement for good.
We sat in the silence for an hour, and then you say, what happened during this hour? Well, a lady sitting opposite me, she said, you'll never believe who's been with me tonight, John. I said, well, go on, try me, Nance. She said, well, I've had Long John Silver with me, and we've been walking for hours along the beach. Oh, I said, did he tell you where he buried the treasure? She said, no. I said, well, let's go back into the silence, find out where he's buried the treasure, and we'll all go and have a bloody good holiday in the Bahamas. Then the lady sitting next to her said, isn't that funny, Nance? I've had his parrot sitting on my shoulder all night. And I thought, this is time you bail out, John.
And bail out he did. But according to his wife, Audrey, the spiritualist church wanted him back for other reasons.
Well, when John went back the next week to tell them he wasn't going to stay in the circle because of what happened, one of the ladies said to him, but John, if you leave, how will I get my healing? And John didn't know what she meant. And she explained to him that since she sat next to him, her back pains had gone. And another lady had a back pain that night and asked him to put his hands on her. So John asked, said, well, what do I do? So she said, just lay your hands on my back. And her pains went. At the time, our daughter's leg was covered in warts. Not just single warts, they were just like fish scale. So when he came home, he put his hands on Jeanette's leg. In a week, there was just marks. And within 10 days, her leg was like anybody else's. And it went on from there.
Well, I started getting torn between the healing and my business. And I was very, very worried about the business because I'd been staying away for such a long time, just going on a Friday, paying the wages. I'd completely lost interest in the business. and I wanted to start healing full time. So I went to bed one night very, very worried as to what I was going to do. I knew what I wanted to do. All I wanted to do was heal, and to hell with the business. So I went to bed this night, and 3 o'clock, or around about 3 o'clock, I sat on the edge of the bed and I cried because I didn't know what to do. Next morning I got up very early and I just sat down with a cup of tea, and then I just felt a wonderful presence around me. You could say a godlike presence. And then I heard my father's voice say, "Don't worry, born to heal, Dad." And this feeling stayed with me for half an hour. So there, my mind was made up, and I've been full-time healing ever since.
I've been feeling quite rough for some time. I was lying with my head on my hand and got pins and needles in my fingers. And the only thing that was unusual at that point was the fact they didn't go away. I had to take someone to the station, so I drove up to the station and I noticed that the pins and needles were actually going up my arm, and that instead of going away, they were actually becoming more intense. And within 2 hours, it was right down the right-hand side of me, and I think probably the pins and needles lasted maybe 2-3 days, and they were replaced by complete numbness, lack of texture, lack of heat and cold, inability to move, just complete collapse on one side of me. I was paralyzed.
Val Jones, a young theatre director from Cheshire, stricken with multiple sclerosis after 4 years of major and painful operations following a car smash.
I was used to fighting for my life, as it were, but by this point in time I'd completely run out of emotional energy. I had nothing left to fight with. I had no faith, I had no hope, and the very substance of the disease, which they call MS, is it eats energy. So it doesn't matter how much energy you put into the system through ordinary things like eating and fresh air, the energy drains away. And so I didn't have any energy to fight or to cope or to do anything at all, and I just emotionally curled up in a ball and thought, well, okay, let's hope this gets we get this over with quickly.
Paralysed down one side of her body and confined to a wheelchair, Val Jones was losing the will to live. But her mother never gave up searching for a cure for the disease, which the doctors say is incurable.
One day, a newspaper in the News of the World with an article about John was passed to me. I read it with great interest, and instinctively I felt that this was the answer that I was searching for, that I wanted to take Valerie along to see this man, John Kane. But my husband was a great skeptic at that point. This particular day, I got the paper out, and I said to him, "Look, would you just please read this article about this man who is a healer?" And he said, "Well, you know my feelings on this sort of thing. I just don't believe in it. But if you feel that you want to go, I will drive you there, providing Valerie herself voluntarily wants to go."
I had no faith at all. I mean, I didn't have any faith in God. I didn't have any faith in this peculiar thing called healing. And I didn't actually at that point in time believe that it was possible for me to get better. I thought I'd come to the end of the road. But my mother was suffering from angina. She'd been rushed into hospital 2-3 years beforehand and had a sequence of bad attacks just before I'd been taken into hospital. And I figured in a sort of strange way that, you know, if I stopped arguing with her and just went, that it would save some of the stress in our relationship, and that just possibly it might do her some good. And that was the situation. I spoke to my father before we went into the hall in Bromborough and said, "You know, don't make any trouble. I know it's not going to work for me and it's not going to work for you, but you know, it just might work for my mother." So we both went in and we sat there and we you know, looked at each other, and the first thing that I noticed was that it was unlike a hospital. Everyone was really cheerful. Room full of, I suppose at that point in time, probably about 300-350 people in Bromborough Civic Hall. And everyone, you know, was chatting away quite merrily, and I thought this was a good sign. And then John came in, and I knew who he was as soon as he walked through the door. He didn't strike me as the person I'd been expecting. I don't know quite what I'd been expecting, but it was not this quite natural man who went around smiling and shaking hands with people and laughing and joking. And I found that I couldn't take my attention away from him.
Val Jones says she sat on the bed in the civic hall waiting for something to happen. One of Kane's helpers walked over and stood alongside her.
He put one hand in front of my forehead and one hand behind the back of my neck, and I suddenly felt so relaxed I wanted to lie down. So I lay down, and he started treating me, and it was as if the pain, the tension in my muscles, which was making them very, very tight, was being drawn out. That's the only way that I can really describe it. And then he brought over another helper, and John himself came. And I didn't know what was happening to me. All I knew was that something was happening, that the doctor's drugs and all the other methods of attempting to get better had not had any sort of effect on me. In fact, the drugs had actually made me worse. And by the time I left that evening, I knew that I would get better.
It's now 7 years since Val Jones travelled to Bromborough Civic Hall in desperation. During those 7 years, she's continued to visit John Kane at his home in Birkenhead. 7 years has seen a remarkable transformation in the girl who lost the will to live.
I have no symptoms of MS now. I have some of the pain, which is due to the bones having been moved back into place, but I have no numbness, I have no paralysis, I have no extreme energy loss. I have no symptoms of MS. I haven't had for 4 years.
Where would you be now without John Kane?
I'd be dead.
You're nice and comfortable now, Vi. Mm-hmm. Just want you to totally relax, love. We'll continue with the healing. There's three of us going to work on you. Just feel yourself relaxing, lovely. Yeah, she's going into the first early
Monday stage. Afternoon in a semi-detached house in the London suburb of Chingford. Kane's golden Rolls Royce has already sent the curtains twitching in the tree-lined avenue. Kane and Norman Carter have driven to London to treat Violet Broomfield's nerves. Hardly one of the most spectacular illnesses, but Violet Broomfield's condition is no ordinary one. Her nerves are bad because 4 years ago, her doctors diagnosed cancer of the bowels and told her she'd be dead in less than 12 months. We have obtained evidence which supports this claim, Violet Broomfield's own medical file, which contains this letter from a surgeon.
Whips Cross Hospital, London E11. Dear Rodney, with reference to Violet Broomfield, date of birth 26/7/1941, 74 Chingford Avenue, London E4. This patient was seen in June this year complaining of lower abdominal pain and dyspareunia and was thought to have an ovarian cyst in the pouch of Douglas and was therefore admitted for a laparotomy as a waiting list case. She had a laparotomy on the 15th of July and was found to have an anterior rectal carcinoma invading her right uterosacral ligament. We discussed this problem with our surgical colleagues and they feel that this is inoperable. Both the patient and her husband have been informed of the diagnosis and the prognosis, which we feel must be less than a year. Yours sincerely, M. Pierce, Registrar to Mr. O'Sullivan, Consultant Gynecologist.
Violet Broomfield was shaken and stunned.
My first reaction was that they'd made a mistake, that they had cut me open and seen something, obviously, and had it tested. But I still said, you know, they've made a mistake. He said, no, he said, we haven't made a mistake. He said, the doctor's a very good doctor, he knows what he's doing. I was just sort of floored. I just sat in the armchair sort of staring all the time, you know, and I was, I kept on going dizzy, I think it was nerves, and, you know, I just couldn't believe it. You know, it just didn't sink in.
Violet Broomfield was condemned to a slow, agonising death from an incurable illness. Her medical file shows that her surgeons expected her to start losing weight, become incontinent, and stop eating. They prepared to prescribe her Brompton cocktails, a deadly concoction of heroin, brandy, and pethidine, to ease her last days. Then Violet Broomfield read about John Kane and persuaded her greengrocer husband to bring her to Birkenhead.
I felt a lot happier when I came back. And we started going up there about once every month, or once every 6 weeks, whenever we could make it, you know, for about 3 or 4 days at a time. And everyone said to me that each time I come home, I look better, you know, and I started putting on weight. I was 9 stone, I think, at the time, and I'm now over 12 stone.
2 years later, 12 months after she should have been dead, Violet returned to the hospital where her incurable cancer had originally been diagnosed. A medical file reveals this amazing letter.
Whipps Cross Hospital, London E11, 20th of September, 1982. Dear Mr. Herbert, with reference to Violet Broomfield, date of birth 26-7-41, 74 Chingford Avenue, E4. This patient was operated on by my registrar some 2 years ago, and he found what he thought was inoperable carcinoma of the rectum, confirmed to be an adenocarcinoma from an omental biopsy. I examined her today, 2 years later. She is fit and well and putting on weight. I do believe the diagnosis was wrong in the first instance. I'm asking Michael Pietroni to see her for reassessment. Yours sincerely, J.J. O'Sullivan, consultant gynaecologist.
The doctors have put it aside, you know, poo-pooed it all. One doctor was quite nice. He said, well, I can't help thinking that your doctor up in Liverpool's got all the credit for all this. My family doctor, she had a row with me at one time. And she said, well, she said, if you're not satisfied with the treatment you're getting, why don't you go to your other doctor up in Liverpool? She was quite sarcastic.
Violet Broomfield's re-examination showed no trace of cancer. Today, she lives a normal life. Normal, that is, apart from a nervous condition brought about by being condemned to a certain death and then reprieved. Violet Broomfield believes she was cured by John Kane. Her doctors remain unbelieving. Their scepticism is common amongst the medical profession. People like Liverpool's community health expert, Dr. John Ashton, will tell you that cures like that just don't happen.
I think most healers are presumably well-meaning and well-intentioned, but I'd be concerned that some of them are probably extracting money from people who cannot afford it, and that they would be raising